Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Denver Metro News, read by Matthew Bell. Today we'll be reading the following main articles. Meow Wolf Denver offers a 2025 refresher for, quote, travelers with new quests. Colorado Democrats introduce bills to crack down on rent algorithms and junk fees. And Matt Ball steps into new role as state senator, and following up with miscellaneous articles. The Denver Herald-Dispatch, week of February 6th, 2025. Meow Wolf Denver offers a 2025 refresher for travelers with new quests. The image shows a cathedral, very colorful, made with glass, looking to be surrounded by rock formations. The caption says, "The cathedral in one of the four worlds that make up Meow Wolf Denver's Convergence Station. There are many new quests people may embark on this year while exploring the vast immersive exhibits of Meow Wolf." By Elizabeth Slay. Meow Wolf Denver, the immersive art experience known for its blend of interactive installations and storytelling, is introducing new features in 2025. The Denver location at 1338 First Street offers visitors a chance to engage with new creative concepts and technologies. One thing I always tell people about Meow Wolf is that Meow Wolf itself is almost like a sentient being that lives off in the hillside, and it comes down from the hillside and attaches itself to parts of your soul, and then follows you around wherever you go, said Rue Johnson, Meow Wolf Denver's public relations manager. Johnson explained that when people visit Meow Wolf Denver, there is always something new to see, as it's a vast immersive experience exploring four different worlds. You can never really see the whole thing, Johnson said. I get lost here. But feature-wise, what we have done is we have created multiple opportunities for visitors, we call them travelers, to immerse themselves deeper into the narrative. Johnson explained those opportunities include quests, which can be accessed by QR codes placed throughout the exhibits and allow people to go down different rabbit holes within the exhibit. The most recent quest offered is Plotzo's Heist, which takes place in a secret pizza vault in the alley on C Street in Plotzo. So it's like the quest takes you to newer parts of the exhibit, but not everybody finds the quest, and that makes sense, Johnson said. It really connects to the deeper divers in that way. Along with the quests, Meow Wolf Denver General Manager Hans Wallrath said there will be new bar services, a summer-long celebration among the converged worlds, and the yearly Cosmic Howl during Halloween. We're excited to build on the successes of 2024 through enhanced guest experience offerings, new seasonal programming, world-class special events and concerts, and the continued popularity of our annual Portal Pass, Wallrath said. This year, Meow Wolf Denver will continue its deep engagement and support of local artists and the arts community through various activations. Wallrath said these activities include the Meow Wolf Makers Workshop, the in-exhibit Gallery, and the Absolute Rubbish Trashin Shows, which celebrate local fashion designers using upcycled materials. Johnson said the next featured artist of Gallery will be Denver-based photographer Shadows Gather, which will be on view beginning in February through April. It's an ode in homage to the club, Johnson said. It's going to be sound, it's going to be conversation, it's going to be photographs, and it's going to be photos of people that Shadows has captured throughout their time of being here in Colorado. Meow Wolf Denver is also partnering with Shadows Gather for an event during Denver's Month of Photography, a biennial festival in March that celebrates the art of photography with exhibits and events throughout the region. The Shadows Gather Month of Photography event at Meow Wolf is Adultiverse, Shutter Up and Smile, a Shadows Gather takeover. It takes place at 5 p.m. March 5th. Meow Wolf's Adultiverse events are 21+, and a valid ID must be presented. For more information on Meow Wolf Denver, visit meowwolf.com/visit/Denver. Colorado Democrats introduce bills to crack down on rent algorithms and junk fees, by Eric Hines. Eric at COTLN.org. Two bills were recently introduced by Democratic state legislators intended to protect renters from increasing or excessive costs. The first bill would prohibit rental building owners from using algorithms to set leasing prices, which critics say leads to illegal collaboration. The bill prohibiting the use of algorithms to set prices follows a move by Colorado and other states to file an antitrust lawsuit against the company RealPage, claiming that six of the nation's largest landlords are, quote, participating in algorithmic pricing schemes that harmed renters, according to a statement by Attorney General Phil Weiser. Bill sponsor State Senator Julie Gonzalez, who represents the north and west portions of Denver, said many changes are happening in the information technology world, but Colorado needs to prevent landlords from potentially colluding to set leasing prices. The White House released a report last month that demonstrated that Colorado renters in the Denver market particularly were being charged an additional $70 per month, Gonzalez said during a press conference at the Capitol. As a result of these algorithms, renters took on the second highest extra cost each month of RealPage's algorithm, an average of $136. That is not okay, and that's why we're bringing this forward. The second bill, introduced by State Rep. Emily Sirota, who represents a corner of southeast Denver, would require the disclosure of certain fees for products as well as rent prices and prohibit landlords from assessing certain fees, often called, quote, junk fees. Too many Coloradans are blindsided by these junk fees and only find out about these mandatory fees when they're checking out online or paying their first rental payment, Sirota said. The bill would prohibit pricing information for a good or service of a property being offered, displayed, or advertised unless the total price is disclosed, with the exception of a government or shipping charge. It would also prohibit misrepresentation of pricing information and would prohibit a landlord from requiring a tenant to pay certain fees, charges, or amounts. A photograph accompanies this article. It's a woman at a press conference. Caption says, State Senator Julie Gonzalez, Democrat Denver, speaks to reporters January 23rd in the Colorado State Capitol about bills she and her party filed to protect renters and consumers from increasing or excessive fees. State Rep. Nikita Ricks of Aurora, a sponsor of the junk fees bill, said a recent complaint stated tenants at one Denver property faced $619 in undisclosed monthly and one-time fees over the course of a year. Those junk fees mislead consumers about the true price of a good service or property, preventing them from accurately comparing prices when shopping around, something that most Coloradans do to responsibly budget the expenses with the rising costs of living by concealing the true price, she said. On January 15th, the Federal Trade Commission sent a letter to Colorado Governor Jared Polis to provide information about the efforts they have made to address junk fees and called for stronger legislation to prohibit them. Drew Hamrick is the Senior Vice President of Government Affairs, Apartment Association of Metro Denver, AAMD, under the Colorado Apartment Association. The association is a nonprofit trade association that represents building owners, developers, management companies, and vendors of the multifamily housing industry. Hamrick said his association is not opposed to requiring transparency for certain prices, but he said if the bill requires landlords to assess general operations fees as part of the overall rent, like the price of utilities, that could cause undue burden for landlords. He said the requirement for advertisements would also be burdensome. If you're going to talk about price, you have to talk about total price, because we have tons of advertisements, as you might imagine, Hamrick said. A room for rent would be a perfect example where nobody talks about price. And having a requirement that you put any price, regardless how it's calculated in those communications, doesn't make sense. But it then goes on to prohibit a number of fees for the housing industry that I think most people would agree are reasonable fees. As for the bill regarding using algorithms, Hamrick said, existing antitrust laws should weed out any violators. If two competitors that have a big enough market share to be able to affect the market start to communicate about what they want their future prices to be, that's a problem, both legally under existing law and for free markets because they've got the ability to artificially inflate prices, Hamrick said. It's price fixing, and that's been prohibited for the last 120 years in the United States, for good reason. But Hamrick also said landlords shouldn't just guess their rental prices and using market information as something that's beneficial to the market and economy. All that's true, and certainly prohibiting price collusion using these types of programs is perfectly appropriate, but we have to be really careful about what we define as information that can't be communicated because housing providers accurately knowing what the market is and raising or lowering their prices accordingly is a good thing for the economy, he said. Hamrick's comments regarding the bills were made during an online meeting with reporters regarding the association's fourth quarter 2024 apartment vacancy and rent report, which found the Denver metro area saw a, quote, record $69 decrease in the average rent from the previous quarter. For the year, AAMD stated the average rent in the metro area fell by 1.5% from the previous year, even as inflation spurred rising costs across other sectors of the economy. Matt Ball steps into new role as state senator. Photograph accompanying, captioned, Denver Director of Policy Matt Ball, Center, speaks to members of the Senate District 31 Vacancy Committee on January 7th at the Christ Church United Methodist in Denver, Colorado. Photo by Jesse Paul for the Colorado Sun. Article by London Lyle, special to Colorado Community Media. After winning a vacancy committee vote, Matt Ball has replaced State Senator Chris Hansen in the Colorado Senate. Ball, who worked as Denver Mayor Mike Johnston's policy director, represents Senate District 31. An Army veteran, Ball said his background influences his approach to politics in a unique way. My military service colors how I see everything, not just policymaking, he said. The impact of a policy can vary widely depending on who is implementing it and who is in leadership to execute what's written down. It's very important to think about how a policy will be implemented and who will be responsible for carrying it out. My experience in the Army was at a tactical and operational level, where we were carrying out missions and orders we didn't devise. That experience has given me a bottom-up perspective on policy. When addressing the state budget deficit, Ball stressed the focus will be on deciding what not to cut rather than what to cut. There will be very difficult decisions to make about how much we cut things that we really shouldn't cut at all, he said. My priority is to protect things like education and para, not to lose any of the progress we've made with the budget stabilization factor in education, and not digging ourselves further in a hole in terms of the state's contributions to para. He also said this fiscal environment presents an opportunity to have a broader conversation about Tabor and whether the current system provides enough flexibility. When it comes to building trust with his constituents, who didn't have the chance to, quote, vote him in, unquote, this time around, Ball said he plans to engage with the community and demonstrate his work as a senator. A Capitol Hill resident and father to three, he takes a down-to-earth approach to legislating. He also noted the size and diversity of his district, which ranges from downtown Denver to the border with Aurora, and said he intends to be accessible to constituents. He also expressed interest in reforming the vacancy committee. Having just gone through a vacancy committee, there are things that I think we should take a look at, he said. For example, under Colorado law, I was not technically a candidate, so none of the fundraising restrictions applied. A vacancy committee candidate could take $1 million, buy every precinct organizer a car, and not tell anybody. That's a loophole we could close to build more public trust in the process. Ball's work in Johnston's office, particularly on the Road to Recovery program, which offers assistance to veterans struggling with their mental health and addiction, has focused on the intersection of criminal justice and public health. I've sat at the intersection between policy and implementation for a little under 2 years, he said. I've seen state laws that make great headlines, but don't do much when implemented, and I've seen state laws that work. My knowledge of municipal government and my understanding of how things are actually implemented will be an enormous asset in the legislature. Mental health will also be a priority for Ball. Colorado ranks 46th in overall mental health rankings, according to Mental Health America, down from 30th in 2023. Ball stressed that Colorado only has 2 state-run psychiatric hospitals, one in Pueblo and one in Fort Logan, which is inadequate when compared to states with similar populations. Maryland, for example, has 5. The sad truth is that when you see someone in crisis who really needs help, if there are no beds, there are no beds, Ball said. We need the state to step in and help solve this. He said that while this legislative session will be difficult due to financial constraints, he's working with groups to explore ways to improve the delivery of mental health services. Ball said his military experience has given him a perspective focused on those most impacted by policy. The biggest thing my Army experience has given me is an appreciation for the people on the ground and the people doing the work, he said. I've always been drawn to groups that don't have a lobbying group or trade association to advocate for them. I think a lot of that comes from my Army experience. This next one is an editorial. A real estate commission says clients, not their brokers, should choose settlement service providers. By Golden Real Estate, Jim Smith, broker owner, 303-525-1851. The Colorado Real Estate Commission, CREC, whose mandate is to protect consumers, has made it clear in position statement number 18 that we brokers should not dictate the settlement service providers utilized by buyers and sellers. Instead, the client should make that decision, influenced perhaps, but not dictated by their real estate broker. Here's the verbiage from that position statement. Quote, when assisting a consumer in finding a settlement service provider, a broker must ensure the consumer plays an active role in the process and ultimately responsible for making the selection. Unquote. A settlement service provider is defined as any provider of a service required in the execution of a real estate transaction. Lenders, title companies, inspectors, surveyors, appraisers, home warranty providers, and lawyers. Another position statement, number 3, echoes a federal law that prohibits us and any of those other service providers from receiving a kickback or something of value, such as dinners or even charitable gifts, in return for referring a client to them. That law is the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act of 1974, RESPA. It was written to penalize persons or entities that are paid a fee, i.e. a kickback, for referring a client to a settlement service provider when the transaction includes a federally backed loan. As a practical matter, it has been assumed to apply to all real estate transactions. RESPA's primary focus is on lenders, to prohibit them from paying an unearned fee to a real estate broker, for example, in return for referring buyers to them. An unearned fee is one paid for doing nothing more than making the referral. If the person performs actual work, such as an attorney assisting on the transaction, that's not a kickback because it was earned. In this week's column, I want to focus on the selection of title companies, since they, unlike those other service providers, are involved in virtually every real estate transaction. Although the contract to buy and sell real estate allows the buyer to specify whether the seller or the buyer is to select the title company and pay for the owner's title policy, it is a common practice for the buyer to assign the responsibility to the seller and to specify the title company named in the MLS listing, and for the buyer to use the same title company to purchase the piggyback title policy for the buyer's lender. To choose another title company for the lender's policy would always be more expensive and serve no purpose. Based on the CREC's position statement, it would seem that we should tell each buyer that they may choose to hire a different title company for the lender's policy than the one being used by the seller, but doing so would add hundreds of dollars to the cost of closing. The exception to that is when the buyer is planning to flip the property with or without making improvements to another buyer and has an agreement with their preferred title company to hold open the policy for the resale, thereby saving the cost of a new title search and title policy. I was reminded of this requirement, that the seller actively participate in the selection of the title company, when I was brought to task for my January 16th column in which I referred to First Integrity Title as our preferred title company because of new service they offer regarding HOA documents. Indeed, a complaint was filed against me by another service provider for violating the rule that the client, not the broker, must select the title company. That complaint was dismissed by the Real Estate Commission's investigator, but it inspired me to remind our readers, which includes real estate brokers and other service providers as well as prospective buyers and sellers, that this rule exists and that we should be diligent about obeying it. It's not that hard to comply. Henceforth, we will make it a practice to provide each client with a handout which, in addition to listing two or more lenders, inspectors, title companies, and other settlement service providers, states in bold type, as suggested in position statement number 18, that the decision to hire a specific settlement service provider is completely at the consumer's discretion, and consumers are not limited to service providers listed by the broker. There is a website to which we refer clients who want to do their own comparison shopping for a title companies. I've promoted it in the past, www.comparetitlecompanies.com. There's another aspect of this matter which I have written about before which deserves repeating, and that's the topic of affiliated business arrangements, ABAs. A service provider is considered an ABA when the brokerage has an ownership or profit-sharing interest in the provider. Virtually all the big brokerages and some smaller ones have their own mortgage companies, title companies, and other service providers which bring additional revenue to the brokerage. Their ABAs must be disclosed to their clients so they are aware that the use of one of the services, which the broker will invariably recommend, benefits the brokerage financially. Golden Real Estate does not have any affiliation in business arrangements because I feel that having such relationships introduces an ethical question of whether we are, as required by law and by the Realtor Code of Ethics, always to put the client's interests ahead of our own. This ethical issue is amplified when the managing broker takes note, as he surely does, of which agents are playing the company game by capturing clients for their mortgage company and their title company. Before I launched Golden Real Estate in July 2007, I was with two large brokerages which had those captive service providers, and it was clear to me that the managing broker was favoring associates with high capture rates for their affiliated businesses. That is not only unethical, it constitutes something of value given to the associate in return for a service provider referral. By the way, you'll notice that we list Wendy Renee below as our in-house loan officer. She rents desk space in our storefront, but we earn nothing from the business she does. In memoriam, our free moving truck has bit the dust. The photo of three men standing in front of a moving van with a large dolly. All three men smiling at the camera. Second photo features the same moving truck, but with seven people in front of it, all smiling at the camera. Back in 2004, I took delivery of our first box truck. After putting 150,000 miles on it, we bought a second truck and put another 100,000 miles on it. For a while, we actually had two trucks, and they got a lot of use, mostly by nonprofits like B Gold N, the International Rescue Committee, Golden Chamber of Commerce, and Family Promise of Greater Denver. At right and below are pictures of volunteers from the Golden Relief Group who used the truck to transport donated furniture and furnishings for resettled refugees from Syria, Ukraine, and elsewhere. At right is our final truck, a 2012 Ford E350, which we purchased after it had logged 120,000 miles for Penske. The engine needs to be replaced at a cost of over $10,000, and it also needs a brake job. We really enjoyed having a free moving truck to offer buyers and sellers, but you will notice in the box at left that now we only provide free moving boxes and packaging materials. Still a nice benefit. We have decided not to replace the truck, but to rent U-Haul trucks when the need arises. We're sorry that so many worthy nonprofits are losing access to a free box truck, but I'm hopeful they'll find another company which can lend them one. Many self-storage companies have free box trucks for clients to use. Maybe one of them will do what we did. The bottom of this page is accompanied with a listing, a real estate listing. The banner says, just listed, 5-bedroom brick ranch in southeast Denver. Don't miss out on this well-maintained brick ranch with finished basement at 2677 South Newport Street in southeast Denver. With easy access to I-25 and the Denver Tech Center, the 66-acre Bible Park with its biking and walking trails, including the Highline Canal Trail, is a half block away, along with numerous ball fields, tennis courts, exercise stations, and a new playground. Inside, on the main level, there are hardwood floors throughout, and a living room with a brick fireplace, 3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms. A sliding patio door takes you outside to the covered patio and a large dog-friendly backyard with artificial turf area. The basement is finished and features 2 more bedrooms, a nicely updated 3-quarter bathroom, and a recreation room with a second wood-burning fireplace. The front yard and backyard are both professionally xeriscaped. The home has an updated kitchen, double pane windows, a newer roof, and a high efficiency furnace. More information, including photos and a narrated video tour, are on the MLS and at www.grelistings.com. Listing agent Chuck Brown will be holding it open this Saturday, February 8th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Or call him, 303-885-7855. List price, $665,000. Headline, I'd rather go through COVID again. Photograph, initial phases of construction for the bus rapid transit project on East Colfax will start from Broadway to William Street. Businesses struggle with $300 million Colfax BRT construction by Paolo Zialcita, Denverite. It's lunchtime at Bourbon Grill, the Cajun barbecue hole in the wall at Colfax Avenue and Pearl Street, known for piling massive portions of saucy grilled chicken, mac and cheese, and rice into styrofoam boxes. Bourbon Grill often has a line at the door. But on a cold Monday, Bourbon Grill's workers were uncharacteristically idle. In fact, it had been slow for a few days now. We had a record low. The lowest sales we ever did was 2 days ago, said Mac Vo, who is part of the family that owns the restaurant. Their sales for that day, $165. To stay optimistic, Vo and the rest of the workers initially chalked it up to the cold weather. But they thought there was a bigger cause. Ever since construction on the $300 million Colfax bus rapid transit project started in October, business has been trending downward for Bourbon Grill and its neighbors. How could we prepare for it? Vo asked. Now it's even more dead. The Colfax BRT project aims to transform one of Denver's busiest roads into a public transit paradise. New trees, better lighting, dedicated bus lanes, nicer stops, and reliable service are meant to get more people on the 15 and the 15L bus routes. Construction on BRT is scheduled through 2027, with sections of the project under construction for over a year at a time. The city has identified 5 construction segments. Some of the segments will be under construction at the same time. This year, construction will stretch along 3 segments, from Broadway to approximately Monaco Street Parkway. Construction started near Colfax and Grant, where Obeid Kaifo saw cones and heavy machinery block the sidewalks near his family's shish kebab grill. Kaifo, who has worked at the Eastern Mediterranean restaurant since he was 14, said foot traffic in the area has been slow since 2020 and the COVID-19 pandemic. He said it hasn't recovered yet, as customers have been eating at home and saving money. There's not much activity on top of it. The construction, it just makes it 100-fold worse, Kaifo said. If you thought we were dead before, well, now you're annoying everybody, and now it's even more dead. For a mile-long stretch of Colfax between the Colorado State Capitol and the diagonal Park Avenue, orange cones plaster the street. Concrete barriers stand in front of some businesses as crews tear up the street, occasionally digging up ghosts of Denver's public transit past. Drivers aren't the only ones dealing with closures. To get from Shish Kebab Grill to Capitol Hill Books, just across the street, pedestrians have to navigate fences and sidewalk closures. In the bookstore, Holly Brooks sat alone at the counter, eagerly waiting for customers. Like Kaifo and Vo, the longtime owner of the bookstore hasn't had much luck lately. Brooks, who said she already works for free, said she's not sure how much longer they can survive with the BRT project's impact on foot traffic. We had to let one guy go because that payroll was just too much, Brooks said. Parking for customers, already a rare luxury along Colfax, has decreased with construction blocking off curb spots, something that's annoying takeout customers. They're mostly complaining it takes some 15-20 minutes to find parking, Vo said. Will the BRT project change the Colfax vibe? BRT has been in the works for over a decade. It's the first project of its kind in the region. Planners envision it as a part of a network of speedy buses that connects the Front Range. Besides benefiting commuters, supporters believe BRT will bring foot traffic to Colfax businesses. Many business owners and workers Denverite spoke to weren't entirely sold on that vision. While some are more optimistic, almost all shared a question. Will the project be worth the pain of construction? At the end of the day, if this thing is built and it's a great big thing and we get all this business, but we lost 25 businesses in the process, it wasn't worth it, said Alex Barakos, who runs Pete's Kitchen. Denon Moore, the business support director for the Colfax Avenue Business Improvement District, said major construction has hurt businesses in other parts of town too. If we look at the impacts that construction had on Broadway, there were losses, Moore said, and so I think some of it is inevitable. City officials have defended the BRT vision, saying they say it will help Denver reduce greenhouse gas emissions while improving road safety and mobility. This is something that needs to happen, Councilmember Amanda Sawyer said in 2022. Some parts of Colfax are more prepared than others. About 2 miles away from the construction zone, businesses in a starkly different side of Colfax watch intently to see how the BRT is going to for their Western counterparts. The project will be coming to their blocks imminently, with traffic cones already approaching Josephine. Bookended by the Sea Film Center and tattered cover on one end and National Jewish Health on the other, this section of Colfax boasts nationally recognized restaurants, a summer farmers market, salons, and a handful of independent thrift stores. Some businesses in the area hope the makeup of these blocks will help them survive construction. I think we have probably a better chance of making it out alive during this just because of the residential area and the nature of what these businesses are, said Holly Turner, owner of salon Big Hairy Monster. Chip Litherland, owner of punk rock-themed antique shop Scavenged Goods, said he's planning to grow his social media presence to counter any foot traffic declines. My customers are fiercely loyal, he said. I have customers that come in every day. I have customers that travel from all over. Some on this side of Colfax, however, are not as prepared. Phil Cardenas, who moved freeze-dried candy shop Mile High Sweets and Treats to Colfax from Central Park in late November, said he expects he'll have to rely on event sales more than ever to make up for his lost business from BRT. Had I known, I would have never set up shop here, he said. Will customers step up again? City officials have promised federal funds to support small businesses through a grant program. The Denver Economic Development and Opportunity Office plans to open applications in March. About $2.8 million was set aside in the city's 2025 budget for grants, a figure that drew criticism from some city officials for being too low. The grants will compare at least 90 days of pre-construction revenue to revenue from the first 90 days of construction and could award the differences between the two. Businesses that sell cannabis are ineligible due to federal constraints. The Colfax Avenue Business Improvement District is also fundraising for a micro-grant program. This isn't going to keep someone in business, but maybe it's going to help. Maybe $1,000 is going to help them cover their grocery costs for the week, or some of their payroll. Or it pays part of the rent just to hopefully ease something for a small moment, Moore said. Still, some business owners are worried the grants aren't adequate, especially compared to the substantial money given during the pandemic. I'd rather go through COVID again just because of those two relief packages, said Barakos of Pete's Kitchen. Kaifo of Shish Kebab Grill believes survival depends on whether businesses can rouse customers to support them, like they did in the pandemic. In 2020, customers would call them just to throw money at them. People were thinking that because they didn't want to lose the places that they appreciate, he said. They were worried about them being lost in the pandemic. For Kaifo and others, COVID and BRT construction are a brutal set of blows in a relatively short period, and only time will tell if it's a knockout. This story is from Denverite, a Denver news site used by permission. For more and to support Denverite, visit denverite.com. Accompanying photo, the Bluebird Theater on East Colfax sits in the center of the Bluebird Business Improvement District. Advertisements on this page. The Prince of Music, 500 years of Palestrina. St. Martin's celebrates the 500th anniversary of the most celebrated and admired composer of the Renaissance, Giovanni Pierluigi da Palestrina, 1525 to 1594. An eclectic survey of his masses, motets, madrigals, and other works will be presented within the context of his incredible life, rising from choir boy in a small town to be the choir master to the Pope at the Sistine Chapel. Saturday, February 22, 7:30 p.m., St. Thomas Episcopal Church, Denver, and via live stream. Sunday, February 23, 3 p.m., First Plymouth Congregational Church, Denver. Monday, February 24, 7 p.m., Brown Palace, Denver. Tickets available at stmartinschamberchoir.org. Second advertisement, Inogen. Inogen Portable Oxygen Concentrators. Call us toll-free, 1-844-823-0293. Picture of a senior couple smiling and drinking coffee. Advertisements on this page, half a page of pink with many hearts that just simply says, Happy Valentine's Day. Below that, reverse mortgages made easy. Call me to schedule your free, confidential, in-home review of this unique product. Mike Bruja, reverse mortgage specialist, cell 720-435-0653, www.rmofco.com. Helping those in my community with their mortgage needs for over 36 years. Lawmakers seek limitations on cell phones at school. Bill aims to eliminate distractions that hinder learning by Jason Gonzalez, Chalkbeat. On January 29th, legislators unveiled a new bill that would require school districts to enact policies to limit cell phone and smartwatch use by July 2026. The bill also requires school boards to spell out exceptions, such as for health emergencies or to report a safety concern. The legislation aims to eliminate distractions within the classroom that hinder learning, lawmakers and others said during a news conference ahead of the bill's filing. They said they hope device-free classrooms will foster better mental health among students. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser, who supports the bill, announced 7 statewide grants to support school districts in their efforts to revamp cell phone use policies. Every metric you can look at underscores what the Surgeon General has called a youth mental health crisis, he said. Over the last decade, the widespread adoption of smartphones is one of the main causes of why young people are suffering, why bullying is on the rise, why self-harm is on the rise, why distraction is on the rise, why kids are not sleeping at night. Recent research has shown that kids who spend more than 4 hours a day on social media experience significant mental health concerns, including anxiety and depression, Lauren Henry at Children's Hospital of Colorado clinical psychologist said. The bill has bipartisan support, and 3 of the sponsors are former educators. Bill sponsors include State Senators Janice Marchman, a Loveland Democrat, and Lisa Frizzell, a Castle Rock Republican, as well as State Reps Megan Lukens, a Steamboat Springs Democrat, and Mary Bradfield, a Colorado Springs Republican. Lukens, who chairs the House Education Committee, said 19 other states have cell phone policies, such as the one introduced in the bill. While many Colorado schools might have a policy, some are outdated or aren't district-wide, she said. However, an increasing number of school districts have started to adopt stricter cell phone policies in the last 2 years, according to a Chalkbeat survey of the largest 20 school districts in Colorado. The policies vary, but most restrict use in the middle and elementary schools during the day, while high school students have more access. Students and parents have varied reactions to the changes. The goal of the legislation is to respect the independence of districts, but also create statewide policy that reduces distractions and promotes better student mental health, Lukin said. We all want our students to succeed in the classroom, and this bill sets us on the right path forward, Lukin said. Superintendent Brian Hill of Mesa County Valley School District 51 in Grand Junction said his district recently revamped its cell phone policies to prohibit cell phones in elementary and middle schools altogether, and in high school classrooms. Some high school principals have gone as far as banning cell phone use during lunch and in hallways, he said. The bill would allow districts to figure out what works best for their schools, such as in District 51, he said. Our teachers actually were the ones that were the most vocal, he said. They were saying, we want something consistent across the board. We want it to come from the district because I'm tired of being the one teacher that's restricting cell phones and the other teacher isn't. District 51 has lockers for cell phones, and some schools have purchased pouch locks, Hill said. The bill doesn't say how schools should store the phones because the bill's authors said they don't want to create extra costs not funded by the state. We have a duty to take immediate action to ensure the situation is addressed appropriately, Bradfield said. Although the bill doesn't provide funding for any policy work by boards, some schools will get support through the Attorney General's grant to identify practices that work for their communities. Here's a list of schools and their intended goals for the funding. Aurora Public Schools plans to host educational opportunities for students, educators, and parents about healthy smartphone usage. Denver Justice High School wants to create an incentive-based system to support student compliance with smartphone policies. The school will also hold engagement sessions with families about cell phone use. East Lake High School will use the grant to expand and improve existing smartphone storage policies. Englewood Schools plans to buy smartphone lockers for classrooms and create a year-long campaign that talks about the challenges of cell phone use. Mesa County Valley School District 51 intends to develop learning tools that focus on digital literacy and the impact of technology on students. Pueblo County School District 70 will host digital literacy presentations and student-led awareness campaigns to teach students how to use smartphones responsibly. Trinidad School District 1 plans to teach students and teachers about the challenges of cell phone and social media addiction. District leaders also want to purchase smartphone storage containers and review its policies. Reprinted with permission from Chalkbeat, a nonprofit news site covering educational change in public schools. Sign up for their newsletters at ckbe.at/newsletters. Advertisements on this page: save on windows and doors. Buy one, get one 40% off, and take an extra $200 off your entire purchase. And no money down, no monthly payments, no interest for 12 months. Call by January 31st, renewal by Anderson, 888-670-2459. Next advertisement, Generac. Be prepared before the next power outage. It's not just a generator, it's a power move. Receive a free 5-year warranty with qualifying purchase valued at $535. Call 866-977-2602 to schedule your free quote. CHUN announces 2025 Seed Awards. Capitol Hill United Neighborhoods, CHUN, CHUN, a registered neighborhood organization, RNO, recently announced its 2025 Seed Awards winner, 10 nonprofit organizations whose work impacts the communities CHUN represents, at their annual members meeting. CHUN is made up of 9 neighborhoods, including Capitol Hill, Cheeseman Park, Cherry Creek, City Park West, Congress Park, Country Club, North Capitol Hill, and Spear, and is involved in advocating for the area's historic preservation, affordable housing, land use, and zoning, public safety and community enhancements through volunteerism and civic engagement. Each year, CHUN contributes funds to a number of projects that impact these communities through its Seed Awards program. The Seed Awards program has awarded over $33,000 to nonprofits throughout Denver since it was founded in 2019. Nonprofit work is vital in our community, addressing essential needs and advocating for those who are often underserved, said Brittany Joy West-Ware, executive director of CHUN. The Seed Awards aim to highlight the transformative efforts of local organizations and the positive change they bring to the lives of individuals and families in our area. Seed Award winners must be individuals, groups, or organizations recognized as a nonprofit and/or an RNO proposing a project within CHUN's boundaries. Selected projects must meet certain requirements, such as aligning with the mission and values of CHUN, enhancing the quality of life for those who live within the community, and having a long-term impact. SEED is an acronym of the program's funding priorities: Smart, Solutions-Oriented, Development, Enrichment, and environmental sustainability and diversity. The 2025 Seed Award winners are Dry Bones Denver / Purple Door, a cafe that provides opportunities for homeless youth to learn barista skills under Master Baristas, which will use funds to support the finalization of the setup of the Purple Door Cafe. Denver Park Trust, an organization that advances equitable access to quality parks and green spaces across Denver, which will use funds towards more plant resources for planting and cleaning supplies. The Gathering Place, a refuge for rebuilding lives, an organization that provides essential resources and hope for women, children, and transgender individuals experiencing poverty, which will use funds toward assisting those who need affordable accommodations and resources. Urban Peak, an organization that assists youth experiencing homelessness with shelter, education, and job opportunities in achieving stability and independence, which will use funds to support the resource rooms and community kitchen. East High School Wrestling Team, a team that is promoting teamwork, discipline, and athletic achievement among Denver's youth and encouraging personal development through sports, which will use funds to help cover new equipment and snacks for the away games. Senior Housing Options, an organization that provides safe and affordable housing to seniors and individuals with disabilities, which will use funds toward new patio furniture. Friends of Maury, Maury Middle School Parent Teacher Organization, an organization that enhances educational opportunities and resources for students and teachers, which will use funds to provide student access to STEM field trips. Safe House Denver, an organization that supports survivors of domestic violence with emergency shelter and counseling services, which will use the funds to create a patio for their families to enjoy while trying to feel safe. Denver Philharmonic Orchestra, an organization that is enriching Denver's cultural landscape with accessible, high-quality orchestral music, which will use funds to bring music to Cheeseman Park. Warren Village Early Learning Center, an organization that assists adults, children, and youth in reclaiming their right to a life of free from domestic violence, which will use the funds to build a new playground for children. The winner's work exemplifies the spirit of collaboration and resilience that defines the greater Capitol Hill area, West Ware said. By providing financial support, we empower these nonprofits to expand their programs, enhance their services, and ultimately create a more equitable and thriving community. RTD adds Detective Bureau to enhance safety. Photograph of two police cars, subtitled RTD expanding its police force to include detectives that will investigate crime across the system's routes and stations. By Monty Whaley, M. Whaley, at ColoradoCommunityMedia.com. The Regional Transportation District will now investigate all crime that happens on the agency's property through a newly created and fully functioning detective bureau. The in-house detective bureau will enable RTD to directly perform investigations on thefts and any other criminal activity that may occur on its property. Anything that affects the ability of our customers to ride the system safely, said Brian Cousineau, the agency's RTD PD commander, who will lead the detective bureau, we want people to utilize our services and feel safe doing so. Cousineau said in a news release that the new bureau will help RTD pursue prosecuting personal crimes involving any threat or use of force, and includes felony-level narcotics violations across the agency's system or property. As the Bureau works out protocols for working with the eight counties in the agency's district, the department will be able to file its own cases and carry out investigations on related cases that occur in different municipalities. As an example, Cousineau pointed to last year's copper wire thefts from RTD tracks. If a copper wire theft happens in Aurora on our property and the wire was valued at $900, that's a misdemeanor crime. We would hand it over to the Aurora Police Department, Cousineau said. Let's say the same $900 copper wire theft happened a week later in Thornton, and then a week later in Lakewood. The benefit of having our own detective bureau is that we can assign our detectives to all those cases. This changes the crime from being a misdemeanor to a felony-level crime. The RTD PD had aimed to establish a fully functioning detective bureau to file criminal cases in jurisdictions throughout its service area. Prior to the copper wire thefts in 2024, the thefts were definitely catalyst for us to get the bureau established more quickly, Cousineau said. Cousineau anticipates the RTD PD detective bureau will be fully operational by the end of the second quarter in 2025, according to the news release. One of the biggest lifts that we have is to get with all eight counties to file cases to each of their expectations. This will also include establishing secure systems for e-filing and setting up protocols for writing probable cause affidavits. On January 6th, the RTD PD internally promoted Transit Police Officer Fabian Rodriguez to Detective Lieutenant and Brian Berry to Detective on its force, according to the news release. Rodriguez has served as an officer for 27 years, with most of his career at the Adams County Sheriff's Office, where he supervised general investigations and the North Metro Drug Task Force. Rodriguez's career includes working with federal organizations such as the Federal Bureau of Investigations, Homeland Security Investigations, and the Drug Enforcement Agency. Berry has served in law enforcement for 18 years. Prior to joining RTD PD, he was a criminal investigator for the Colorado Department of Revenue for 6 years, the news release states. A third detective, Craig Tangeman, joined the force on January 21st. Tangeman has worked in law enforcement for over 26 years, with 19 years dedicated to investigative operations for Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office. He has conducted federal and state investigations and managed over 200 police officers, federal agents, and volunteers as part of a proactive investigation investigative operations, the news release states, Tangeman is experienced in conducting major case investigations, having been assigned to the Metro Gang Task Force, the Safe Streets Fugitive Unit, and the Child Exploitation and Human Trafficking Task Force. Cousineau, who has worked for RTD PD for almost 2 years, according to RTD, in Cousineau's 28 years working in law enforcement, 14 have been dedicated to supervisory and investigative functions, including working on narcotics task forces, supervising detectives, and overseeing investigations ranging from high-level misdemeanors to homicide crimes and internal affairs. The agency is budgeted to add 2 more detectives to the department later in 2025, RTD says. The RTD PD is also in the process of developing an evidence room to follow the proper chain of custody to hold evidence needed to prosecute cases. Once established, this will mitigate reliance on other police agencies to retain evidence needed to prosecute criminal activity that occurred on RTD property. The agency states in the news release that RTD PD have taken deliberate strides to grow the force to better support community and employee safety as part of the agency's Welcoming Transit Environment strategic initiative. The RTD PD force stands at approximately 90 officers today and began the year with recruits in the police academy. The agency is budgeted for 150 sworn officers in 2025, a significant growth from when the department had 19 officers on the force in August 2019, the news release states. Denver Herald, a publication of Colorado Community Media. Call first, care of the Colorado Sun, Buell Public Media Center, 2101 Arapahoe Street, Denver, Colorado, 80205. Mailing address, 750 West Hampton Avenue, Suite 225, Englewood, Colorado, 80110. Phone 303-566-4100. Web denverherald.net. To subscribe call 303-566-4100. Brooke Warner, Executive Director. Brooke@ntln.org. Linda Shapley, Director of Editorial and Audience. lshapley@coloradocommunitymedia.com. Christy Stedman, South Metro Editor. cstedman@coloradocommunitymedia.com. Aaron Addenbrook, Marketing Consultant. eaddenbrook@coloradocommunitymedia.com. Lindsay Nicoletti, Operations and Circulation Manager. lnicoletti@coloradocommunitymedia.com. Business Inquiries. For advertisers or vendor questions, please email our business department at accounting@coloradocommunitymedia.com. Columnists and guest commentaries. Columnists' opinions are not necessarily those of the Independent. We welcome letters to the editor. Please include your full name, address, and the best number to reach you by telephone. Email letters to letters@coloradocommunitymedia.com. Deadline, Tuesday for the following week's paper. Denver Herald Dispatch. ISSN 1542-5797, USPS 241-760. A legal newspaper of general circulation in Denver, Colorado, the Herald Dispatch is published weekly on Thursday by Colorado Community Media. 1624 Market Street, Suite 202, Denver, Colorado, 80202. Periodicals postage paid at Denver, Colorado, and additional mailing offices. Postmaster, send address change to Denver Herald, 750 West Hampton Avenue, Suite 225, Englewood, Colorado, 80110. Corrections. Colorado Trust for Local News asks readers to make us aware of mistakes we have made. Email Linda at cotln.org if you notice a possible error you would like us to take a look at. Dr. Jeff is alive. Rumors of the conifer veterinarian and Animal Planet star's demise are greatly exaggerated, by Jane Reuter, jreuter@coloradocommunitymedia.com. A year ago, an international website published a story saying veterinarian Dr. Jeff Young had died. That single false story still resonates at Conifer's Planned Pethood, the animal hospital owned by the former star of Animal Planet's long-running Rocky Mountain Vet. Young is now on his fourth round, with cancer but very much alive and with a still very intact sense of humor. That is all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for Denver Metro News, read by Matthew Bell.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.